All right, good morning. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Tuesday, the 16th of November. Sure you've missed me. I can't even remember when the last one was, about 10 days ago. We broke for international football. Been eventful. I'll cover that in tomorrow's pod, probably. We've got one of our guest pods today. So rather than talk about all my woes of the last week, I've had dogs ill, Sam in the dentist and all that. I'll cover all that tomorrow. I have got Martin Wathy with me. Now, Martin has been an FTS member for, it's probably near the outset, I would think, Martin.
Indeed.
Morning, Martin, by the way. Let's say good morning. Good morning. Martin is, he's the only Lincoln fan I know. I know that for certain.
It's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, but I don't know a massive amount about Martin. We've spoke a few times. I actually invested in a betting method for Martin in the horses, which perhaps we'll talk a little bit about later. But even that, I just sort of, we set that up and we've had the odd chat, Martin, but we don't have a massive amount. So I don't know a massive amount about your background. I liked obviously what you came to me with that betting and said, right, let's do that. But there's been some mistakes and woes and errors along the way.
Oh, yes. Many.
And you sort of said you'd be happy to come on and talk about it. I think obviously listening to people like Scott and that in the past have sort of made a few more people come forward, which is good. Because I do think everybody learns from these sort of ones where we talk about, you know, I know Martin as a member, but it's actually getting to know him as a person and you find out everybody's different and has their own battles. So, Martin, we'll start wherever you want to start. Go back as far as you like.
Right.
Go.
Well, we can go back. I got into betting, actually. It's quite strange. It was my grandfather, on father's side, grandfather. And he used to like betting. Now, in them days, it was looked frowned upon. I mean, he was probably the black sheep of the family. Well, he definitely was. A bit controversial. But he liked to bet on the horses, dogs, football. And I suppose it was through him, but it was a slightly earlier memory. I actually watched it yesterday fully for the first time. I remember watching the Foinaven Grand National. It fascinated me as a kid. I mean, it was such a sight to see.
And that was Foinaven was the 100-1 winner.
It was indeed.
Of the Grand National, for people who don't know. What year would that have been?
I checked it because I wasn't quite sure.
I'm going to have a guess, and I don't know that I'm right. I'm going to have a guess at 67.
Spot on.
Oh, there you go.
And I got this lovely memory of it where they all started falling at this, and it's actually the smallest fence on the course, and I could see this train behind it. There was a train track, or a train stop. So whether they stopped and they watched the race, whether it's something they used to do, I don't know. But so yesterday, you were going to come and wanted to chat, I thought, I'm going to dig that out. And I watched the race. It was fascinating to see. It evoked so many back memories of it. And what a race. I mean, today, he would have been the only finisher.
Really?
Everybody else remounted, those that came behind him. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic.
And you're not allowed to do that now, of course.
You can't do that.
No, man. That's right, yeah.
I've got a feeling, was it Best Mate? Was it Ruby Walsh remounted? Was it at Exeter? And did the horse die afterwards? Did they blame it on him because he remounted? Anyway, they stopped it after that.
I don't know. Steve Williamson will be listening. He will drop me a text because Steve is like an encyclopedia of racing. He will drop me a text on that, I'm guarantee you.
Yeah. So anyway, it perked my interest because obviously a youngster at that time and Grandad was banging on. It was a couple of years later, banging on about this horse in the National. Oh, this horse is going to win. Oh, I'm going to have plenty on this. And I says, oh, can I have a bet on it? Because it was frowned upon, honestly. Grand National, you perhaps could have something on it. So
How old would you have been at this stage?
71, this was. 1971, I was 13.
Wow.
12, 13.
You were into betting as a kid.
Well, it was because of my granddad. I mean, it wasn't the done thing. I mean, it was frowned. I'll tell you, he was a controversial character. He was a miner and a union man, and he just went his own way most of the time. He didn't bother what people said. you know, into the betting shop. And it fascinated me. If you went round his on a Saturday, I know I'm waffling again. If you went round his on a Saturday, he'd have the racing on. It used to fascinate me. He used to say, well, that one's going to go now 74. It'll go into 64, 11 to 8. And I'm thinking, how does he know this? And, you know, as a kid, you get fascinated by this.
Yeah.
So anyway, we come to this 71 grand national, and he was really keen on Specify.
Right.
So I said, well, can I have some on? He said, well, you better ask your parents, you know. So they let me put my pocket money on. He said, you do realise if it loses, that's your pocket money for this week gone. So 71, I was trying to think, decimalisation came in then. So I either had 50 pence each way or 10 shillings each way. I can't remember which it was. Well, the damn thing went mund into it. I got 20 quid. I mean,
wow.
To a kid at that age, I mean, it was like the Bank of England. I mean, you can't believe it, Ian, honestly.
Yeah.
It was a huge sum. I mean, you were buying, I don't know, sweets and comics at that time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was born in 71, and I mean, I was raised, my time with my old man was sitting in a car outside a betting shop. That was him spending his day with me. Like, he'd finish work on a Saturday, work Saturday mornings, he'd finish at lunchtime, and he would spend the afternoon in Corals.
Yeah.
And it was back when Corals were the white shop front, they had like a red hexagon sign, and of course you couldn't see in at all. It was just all those days. It was like they had like the barber's sort of things hanging in the doorway, and everything else was blacked out. And my afternoon of enjoying myself with my old man was sitting in the car while he was in there all afternoon.
Well, of course, there were dens of sin in them days.
They were, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Evil places. Oh, only the bad folk went in then.
So you would you have been better if that horse had lost? Or did that pique your interest and get you right into it?
Well, because my other grandfather, that sounds like Milton Jones here, don't I? My other grandfather, he was big into, he loved his cricket and his football. So I was just sport mad.
Right.
Just off tangent, to get my earliest memory with him was watching the 66 World Cup final. The first real memory of football. We did actually win something, you know. We had a clever bloke in charge that said we're going to win the World Cup, and we did. Not Muppets we have, or the Muppet we've got today.
Yeah, I miss those days, unfortunately. Never thought
all these years later I'd still be waiting to see England win something again.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to see it. I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime. No.
So fast forward in that then, so you're 13, you win this 20 quid.
Yeah.
Obviously, at some stage then, adulthood comes. What was your sort of first foray yourself into gambling for yourself?
Oh, it used to just have a few quid on the horses or football bets, you know, just trying to land an acky on the football, that sort of thing. Because we went into business, actually. I left college and went to the business with my father. He started up on his own. He was fed up with doing it for other people and getting laid off then when these were sold. So we went into business then. So we had shops. We'd buy and sell shops, build them up, sell them on, move on.
Right.
So it was only sort of betting on the side, you know.
On a Saturday or whatever for a regular.
Saturdays, yeah.
Yeah,
and then Emery came to Lincoln actually, and we bought a newsagent. That would be in the early 80s, and that's when my love affair with Lincoln started. 40 years on, that's the love affair with them. So it was all sport. We worked office 5 in the morning. You'd get up 7 days a week, and then any spare time I had, I'd be just doing sport, snook.
Well, playing sport or?
Yeah, playing, watching. I mean, we went to more events. I mean, snooker, golf, cricket, football. You know, we followed them all. Played a lot of them.
Right, okay.
So everything was sport. So betting was just for fun, really was for fun. You know, you'd have a bet on that. Mates weren't really into it. It was me, I suppose, granddad's influence still.
Yeah, it's winning. It's winning that 20 quid, isn't it? It is. I mean, not being funny, yeah. It is hooks like that that you know, you say to people, you know, Vegas works on that. Somebody wins a $1,000 jackpot in a machine, and they think, well, that's going to happen all the time. It doesn't happen all the time, but they keep, because they've done it once, you keep chasing that dream.
Well, you do, because winning that money, would it have changed? I don't know is the real answer, because I know a couple of years later, he was very keen on Crisp in the Grand National. I think it was 73. And I backed it with him. It was just wood because it was top weight. Coming round the elbow, we're there winning. And it was like a drunken sailor watching him come in. And this little horse called Red Rum went and picked him on the post. Yeah, you get both aspects. But yeah, the first one was a winner. So interesting. I've not thought about it like that. Would it have changed things?
Yeah. If you'd had to spend that week without your pocket money, would you have?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
So then fast forwarding again, you sort of said to me in the preamble, you've had some woes, made some mistakes.
Yeah, well, of course, the build-up to that was, as I say, the lifestyle I was having at that time, snookering. Oh, we went, just quickly while we're there, one of the best sporting events I ever went to. We used to go to the Crucible every year. We saw all the top players, you know, watched them. And there was... one night we're there, we got the Jimmy White Tony Drago match. It's split table, came to the other side. Oh, and they were both red hot that night. I mean, Jimmy White was popping them off the chandeliers. I mean, he was superb.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
This one frame, they'd opened up, and Jimmy White had potted three reds and three blacks. And I'm nudging my mate and I'm saying, there's a 147 on here. And he goes, oh, no. And the atmosphere was electric around half the arena, because obviously it was behind the screen. And you just knew it was going to happen. I mean, I've never felt electricity like it. No, the other side, because they didn't raise the screen. The players stopped the other side. Can't remember what game it was, but... Oh.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't watch snooker now. I barely know who plays, but it... It was that back then, wasn't it? Back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said it before, I think I've said it on pods, that sport just had characters, and snooker was one of those games that had characters. Alex Higgins, Jimmy White. I mean, I play poker with Jimmy White. Absolute, cracking.
Bloke,
I think he was drugged out of his head when he was at the poker table, I'll be honest. His eyes were all over the place.
Well, he was on something that night. We watched him. Good.
Yeah, but fascinating. You know, and obviously the Dennis Taylor Davis fight, all those sort of things were just fascinating. So, right. So fast forward, we're going to we want to get to these betting woes. That's where I want to get to.
Well, yeah. So it was all great. And I used to play a lot of cricket as well. And I'll struggle with my back. I'd struggled with my back for a long time, and I carried on doing all these things. And I'd seen this specialist. Oh, he was a right bumper swap. But I'd seen him, and he said, "Oh, you'll be fine. Yeah, it's a sprain. Just keep doing what you're doing." He says, "Just come back if you get any more problems." Cricketing the following week, and the back packed in completely, and I had to go back to him. He says, "Oh, well, we'll try something new." It was a thing called MRIs. They were new in them days.
Right.
I went to Sheffield and have one, and came back, and he said, "Oh yes, you've got a prolapsed disc. You've got to have surgery." And that was when everything spiralled out of control. Really, I'd sold the business at the time, thankfully, and it was a very difficult period. I was all that lifestyle I had went. I had to sell my golf clubs because I couldn't play golf anymore. Snooker packed in. I'd even stopped going to football. I couldn't go to... I mean, we used to go home and away, Lincoln, every single game. That all stopped for a temporary period of time. And I just got into a serious case of depression.
Right. So you're obviously trapped in your house. So sort of, you know, not being funny, what a lot of people would have probably felt last year, where life just... all of a sudden, you know, from March the 23rd was completely different, and taken away from you,
And diagnosed, as well as all the everything else, with depression, you see.
Right.
And they said, well, we can go on tablets and stuff for all that. And I said, oh, dear, I'm having enough tablets with this ready back. So they said, well, you need to get another in. Start walking, doing stuff like that, or swimming. So I started walking, didn't I? Well, this particular route, there was a bookie's shop, wasn't there?
Right.
So yours truly decided, well, we'll go in there. And it became, well, I was going in there every single day, gambling. Unlike Scotty, I didn't get into debt because obviously I'd sold a business and had money. Never a good thing. But I was going in there every day. I got to know the manager there very well. I used to go in and help him set up in the morning, you know, put the papers on the wall.
Well, so you were getting in before it all got going. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Putting the papers up, getting all the crappy bet sheets out that, you know.
Yeah, when they used to put the newspapers and that up, yeah.
15s, you know, Union Jacks, all that rubbish that they like you to waste your pennies on. And I'd spend hours in there, honestly. Betting, of course, you do. You're in there betting. And yeah.
So were you doing, I mean, I've been in betting shops, obviously going back in time. I won for myself, but not often. But I used to stand in them just to put bets on for the guys in the horses. So I used to have to get there at 9:30, 9 and be in there till sort of 1 o'clock, waiting for phone calls and messages and things. And I've seen how people are, and I mean, I just shake my head. Obviously, I doubt when you were doing it, there was virtual racing, but were you betting on everything, greyhounds?
There was virtual racing.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, that did come in. It was coming in. I could never understand the joy of that because, you know, it's a computer operated there. I suppose if there was a lot of money went on a particular horse for a computer-wise, why is the computer going to let that win? That was my theory on it.
Did you bet on it?
I didn't, no.
No?
Thankfully, it wasn't advice. I was losing enough on the horses, if you are. The proper horses.
Did you do greyhounds as well?
Yeah, dabble with them, but I mean, your money's gone by the time the flipping traps open with them very often, or the first bend when they. But yes, I mean, all that. I mean, that was what was early racing. The first punters used to come in and it'd be dogs, Walthamstow and the like, you know, they'd be betting on them. I'd be in there and you get talking to folk and, you know, you're getting a losing run and somebody says, oh, I've got this bloke, I get tips off. Oh, that's the then you're really heading down a slippery slope. So he won't give us where he was getting it, but he showed us the sort of firm it was, you know. And so you.
So when you say you got tips off, what actually in the shop?
Yeah, he's talking about it because he's winning a few. You know, he's Billy Big Bollocks. You know, I'm winning a few. Yeah, I get off tips to. So everybody's sort of listening and.
Yeah,
and he talked to him quietly, and he says, "Oh yeah, I get it from such and such." And then, of course, you start getting hooked in that, thinking, "Well, I could do with getting a few winners," you know. So you start doing that, getting tipsters, paying, of course, and then you start buying systems and things. Funny enough, I was rummaging yesterday, saying, "I thought I bet I've got loads of these systems still," but. Thankfully, I'd had a mass clear. I kept one. It was the very first one I bought. Hold on, what's it? The Prosperity Plan. I got it down here. I was looking at it yesterday.
So where did you buy that from? I mean, what year are we talking here?
This is 1995. It says on this little book, a tiny little book.
So the internet was probably in its sort of infancy.
Yeah, I wasn't on. It was all at the shop and you'd send through the mail. It was all through the mail in them days.
What do you mean it was in the shop?
Also, betting in the shop. I wasn't certainly not internet.
No, but where did you get the Prosperity system? Where would you have found it?
That would be through. Oh well, once you start sending letters off to get these tips and things, you're on email lists, and this stuff starts.
Oh, you used to do. So it was post and email back then. Yeah,
not email. So post. It was all post.
So you used to write off to people?
Oh, you'd see these adverts or something. Once you've sent for one, you get on email in this. And so you get all the junk.
Because they just obviously sell your detail or did.
They sell your names on the list. So you're buying all this crap. And honestly, I'm looking at this one here. I mean, it's very basic. I probably paid £29, £39, £49, whatever the going rate was at that time. I mean, you buy this junk. And you jump from one thing to the next, and honestly, you're a moron.
And do you want to declare how much that period would have cost you, do you think?
Do you know, a lot of, it's, if I could give you an exact figure, I would. Hundreds, easily. Maybe into the thousands, probably. You know, right. As well as buying other services.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could, I mean, I've never done drugs other than prescribed them, but I suppose you get like a junkie.
Right.
The next fix. And your next fix is that wonderful thing that somebody's advertising or selling you. That's going to be the one.
Yeah.
So you buy this crap. And then you might look at it and think, well, I've wasted money there. But it's almost like a high. You're getting a high on this rubbish that's coming through. I suppose it's like a junkie. That's the best way I can describe it. So this is all through the post, you know, and you wasted all this money. Tipster will come on and you'll ring this tipster up. I suppose there might be the odd one that gives... I mean, look. Even a blind squirrel can find the odd acorn.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get some winners out of it. But
and what sort of money were you betting?
Oh, I could bet anything. Hundreds can be hundreds. £200 might have been going down on a horse.
So how much would the betting have cost you?
Or more than probably more than the it would be more than I was wasting on the.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you said hundreds, maybe thousands, if you're betting £200 a race, I mean, that's a lot of money back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, in the 90s, yeah, well, yeah, I'd sold a business, Ian.
Yeah, but how much do you reckon that whole the betting and everything cost you? What do you reckon?
Probably like Scotty, the sort of money Scotty lost or he went into debt to.
What was that? I can't remember. 30, 40, 50,000, yeah. Something like that. 30, really?
Yeah, probably.
And you just kept doing it and doing it.
Oh, you're like a druggie wanting the next fix. It's true. Yeah. I mean, you do get winners in that time, don't you? It's not all losers, but I mean,
that's it, yeah. And obviously, you were battling depression. I don't know. I mean, people know I've had depression, Martin. I've been diagnosed with depression twice when I was a teenager and my old man went, and then when my mum. Died as well.
Yes.
It was just a particularly bad time in life. And you bat on. So I understand there, but obviously I wasn't spending my whole day down at bookmakers, which I'm not sure is the best way to handle depression, but it is what you, I understand that you just get into this routine of doing things, don't you?
Yes. Yes. It was the walk.
Yeah.
That was the excuse.
Yeah. That's what you're telling yourself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You lie to yourself. I mean, I liken it to a junkie. You're just lying to yourself all the time. You're not telling me.
How did you kick yourself out of that?
Please don't say
you haven't.
I have. The person we're talking about here, I don't really recognise him.
Right.
This is part of the journey to where you are today.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, there was a couple of incidents with it. One that I was developing a cough. A chesty cough. I mean, I didn't smoke, but then places in them days were smoky, smelly holes.
Yeah, you could smoke inside them, couldn't you? Of course,
oh, yeah. Oh, and your clothes reeked a bit.
Yeah.
And the manager at this place as well, they used to have to go around a few. They were independents at this time, and they got bought out by Betfred, and he condensed it down to one. It was a bit of a further walk. But he'd been in one of these shops, and he was telling me, this chap, had collapsed coming up to the counter, heart attack, I think, and he collapsed on the floor and he's trying to clear him away. And there was two working in them days, you know, they cut it down to one now, but there was two of them working in. So one was ringing up ambulance and he was looking at this bloke, you know, trying to keep people away.
Yeah.
He says this bloke strode over the top of this bloke and slams his betting slip on the set. Said, dogs are about off, who's taking my bet?
Yeah.
He says, I've never seen anything like it. He says, I threw him out.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, that's exactly what they used to do, run up. I mean, it was a sprint up to the counter.
Oh, it was. They wait until the dog's just about, the bell's about. They're all
exactly,
to the
yeah. Yeah. For the dogs, definitely.
Oh, yeah, but, well, yeah, dogs. It was dogs. I mean, you do see life in there. That's that's a fact. So I'm beginning to, you know, I was beginning to weigh in with the idea of it, and then the internet coming in, you see, and the book is then... decided, or the government decided, they were dropping betting tax.
Yeah.
And the good old bookies were offering you all these lovely offers, all joiners and joiners. So I joined about 15, 16 bookie accounts at that time. And then it becomes even worse because it's not real money. Well, it is money, but it's a figure then that you're gambling with. And that's not a great time either, but it was all online stuff then. And then 2008, I happened to see a leaflet for somebody called FTS. I thought, well, that looks interesting. That's different. Because I tried anything, I tell you, Ian, honestly. Yeah.
Wouldn't have been a leaflet.
It was something, you know, I was looking through old stuff again yesterday, and the only things I've got left are there's an FTS trading system, an FTS staking plan. Hold on, I've written it down. FTS 15-minute super system.
Yeah.
And a system 3. As you said on the thing, I do have original names from my
life. Yeah.
And also, because when you first started, you promoted other stuff. I found a football cash builder by John Dixon.
Yeah.
And I got that there as well. And
That wasn't too good.
No, that was
That was in the days when people used to, well, people still do, but then people used to email me and I was green with that and say, oh yeah, okay. So what snapped you out of it then? What was it? What was the thing that said, I've got to stop doing this?
Talking to you, actually, you'd done some seminars, and because at that time I was a carer for my mum, full-time carer for mum, so that took me away from doing lots of things, but I was still gambling online.
Yeah.
But she took all my last 10, 12 years I was doing that. And you were doing seminars, and I thought, I'd like to go to these seminars, but I couldn't do it. And I think it was in 2016, you were doing them, you could pay and you do them one-to-one on it'd be FaceTime at that time you were doing Zoom. We didn't know the first thing about Zoom. And so I had one of these with you, and you opened it up by asking who I was, you know, and a bit of back chatting up, this sort of thing, and what systems and stuff I was doing. Well, you're actually quite kind, really. I mean, you should have given it me. Your answer was, you're doing too many things.
Yeah.
You need to focus. And you've often said when you've gone to seminars, you've looked around the room and if there was 100 in there, you know there'd only be 2 people left.
Yeah, you do. You see it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had, there'll be people listening to this who've sat in those rooms. You know, and we haven't done one for a number of years, but I mean, I used to have people gambling in the room.
Yeah.
I used to have people sitting, betting the horses, laptop up, not really interested in what I was there for or had to say. You know, and then, of course, they'd not encourage other people on the table. That would become the focus of the table. You used to stand and go, they've got no chance.
Well, you didn't say it to me, but I knew what you meant. I'd got no chance. It was basically, you did the seminar thing with me, and we went through it. But I knew, and I thought, after I'd finished, I thought, I need to have a look at myself. Seriously, I need to have a look at myself. So I had a hard, cold look in the mirror, as they say. So when I got over the old George Clooney looks that were staring back at me, I thought, I don't like this fella. This fella's an idiot. So I stopped doing everything that I was doing, everything.
Good.
I deleted, emails and stuff from sites that I was on, unsubscribed from them, everything. And all I left was FTS, what you'd been showing me. And you did a racing one at that time, because I had been with you when JG.
Yeah. That'd have been 2015, I think, then, because we did a football and a racing together. That's right.
And I was doing quite well, actually, with JG. It was all the other crap I was doing that was giving it back. I got lots of bookmakers' accounts shut at that time. You start winning and then...
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's it, the minute.
I mean, closing you.
He bet proper horses, so the minute they see that, I mean, it's worse now, but even back then, it was hard work, wasn't it? They just, you know.
So I cut it all out. I was doing the football and the racing one that you were doing. And so I set myself up properly for doing these. And so I'd sort these as well as looking after mum. So that was all I was doing. Now, the racing one, we had a horrendous run. I think it was during the summer period. I prefer jumps racing as it goes, but not by the by, so I stuck with it. I think I lost 80% of the bank.
Right.
What you told me at this seminar and told me about myself, I thought, well, I'm going to stick at it. You know, 80% gone, but I've still got 20% left. No good jumping shit now. So I carried on and we won it back to the National Hunt part of the season. I think we actually got slightly ahead.
Yeah.
And things were great, you know. So
I mean, that's the thing. It is hard. I mean, that's the mental battle, isn't it? That's, you know, again, I mentioned him. I've mentioned him a couple of times, Betty Blogger last year, 107. It's if you'd given up at that 80% down.
Yeah.
That's it gone. Now you've got to try and find some. It's hard enough to find these things that win anyway, but now you've got to try and find something else that's going to give you that back. Fair play. I mean, that's a massive shift from a guy who's standing in the betting shop all day, buying every single thing going, to, because there must have been a low time in that period where you're thinking, Christ almighty. Wow.
Your back's not killing you, then you're beating yourself up with losses as well. Yeah, not a good time.
I don't know the full story, but I know you had battles with your mum. How was the depression and that at this stage?
I re-examined everything at that time. Mum was, it was really full time then. We became, I suppose, almost like lockdown mode.
Yeah.
The hospital visits and that sort of thing. We were fine. She was great. She'd always been great. I didn't mind looking after her full time. That was my choice.
Yeah.
And she got ill and this is a bit more difficult to talk about we'll go. I'll try and do it.
You talk about what you don't, honestly. If it's too hard, don't. But
no, but it's part of where I arrived with you again, to be honest with you. She got ill, heart problem, and she'd had falls and she had to go into hospital. All told, she was in there 9 weeks. I was going up every day. And they kept mithering me, not the hospital side, the admin side, the clipboard brigade. I mean, I could find some juicy place just to stick their clipboard because we had many a harsh word. They said that she needed to go temporarily to respite care. They wouldn't take her because they came and examined her and said she wasn't fit for that. So the hospital then said I'd got to put her in a care home for a while so build up to come home. Mum has always said she wanted to be at home at the end with the family around her. So I was trying to achieve that for her. Well, they wanted to go in these homes. And then they had them in neurovirus hit the ward. So that was an early test of coronavirus. I'm sorry, mate, I'm rambling, I know. But
no, go on, no.
So she was in, they were in lockdown on the ward. So the home I'd been to see loads of homes because she wasn't going anywhere that I hadn't seen first. So they couldn't come to assess her to see that she was all right. Well, they'd been locked down for this neurovirus and they hadn't been pestering me during this time because obviously I couldn't go in either.
Yeah.
And then I got a call from the home that she was going to go in and she said, the ward's back open again now. We've been in to see her today. Your mum cannot come into, she needs a full-time nursing in a home. I says, all right. Well, they give you a booklet, you know, of all these homes. So yeah. I was having a quick scan through and I wrote five down places I was going to look at. And they rang me about half an hour late from the hospital and said, yeah, they've just told us your mum can't go into that. What are you doing about it? I says, well, I'm doing nothing then, mate, because I'm just on my way to the hospital. Oh, you need to do so. I said, well, come and see me when I'm at the hospital then. They didn't. So the next day I went to have a look at they'd asked me for these five homes that I'd written on this list. Yeah. So I went to see this first home on this first day. And it was okay. I thought, well, yeah. And I went to the hospital the next day to see Mum. And the curtain was round her bed. I thought, well, what's going on now? Staff nurse comes up to me. She says, what are you doing here, Martin? I says, what do you think I'm doing? I've come to see Mum. She says, well, Mum's not here. I says, what do you mean she's not here? Where have you moved her to now? She says, well, she's gone. I says, gone? What do you mean gone? She says, well, she's gone to a home. I said, well, which home have you sent her to? Where? So they didn't know. So I had to go down to dispatch. They took me down to dispatch and said, oh, yeah, your mum's gone. Yeah, she's gone to such. I says, what you sent her there for? They said, oh, well, she's got to go out. They want the beds, you know, all the time. Yeah. And so fortunately, whenever I go to these places, I put the number in my mobile. So I ring this home and they said, have you got Mrs. Wavy there? He goes, oh, yes, she's just arrived. So the hospital said, well, there you are. I says, well, no matter about there I am. I said, I'll sort you beggars out later. I'm off to see where you'd sent her. They'd sent her to this very first one I'd actually been to see, because I'd written that first on my list. They'd sent her there. Well, the neurovirus sort of finished her off, really. She was in this home just for a few days, and they rang me. I was going each day to see, and they just rang me at night time and said she'd passed away.
Oh, sorry, Macca.
I said, what do you mean passed away? I said, if I'd have known she was that bad, she'd have been at home with me.
Yeah.
So as you get a few people around, obviously, the first few days, you know, the grief and all that, and then they all disappear.
Yeah.
So you're then on your own, and I'm racked with grief and this guilt. This guilt was overwhelming me because I hadn't fulfilled her wishes. Yeah. But such a state, I did honestly, I was going to commit suicide. It's not easy.
I mean, I speak openly. My mum died, you know, horrendous period with my old man, horrendous. You know, I've sort of hidden from my old man for 30 years and not spoken to him. You know, and I've said it, and we got a, she wasn't well, but not bad. You know, she was still looking after our boy, was a little boy then. They had a fantastic relationship, but she went in hospital, you know, bits and bobs wrong with her. And I said a couple of times, I went with her, is she seriously ill? No, we'll get to the bottom of it. Yeah. And then they called me in on a Wednesday and said, can you come into this room? And they just took me in a room and said, your mum will never leave here. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, we didn't know, but we opened up her up last night because she was in discomfort. So we thought we'd open up and have a look. And she's riddled with cancer. She's not going to leave. And I was on my own. You know, all my family live away.
Yeah.
We've sort of spread out over the, you know, as you do, as you get older.
That's right.
What would I have been? 32, 33. And I was in absolute pieces. So don't be ashamed of it. I mean, I was in that hospital in absolute pieces, and she died on the Friday. That was a Wednesday. Literally, like they told her, I had a chance to ring everybody. You know, my family all of a sudden converging from West Country, whatever. And she was dead on the Friday. It was almost like they told her, and she said, well, that's me done, and gave up. So, I mean, I went through exactly the same. You know, she was a massive part of my life because I was fighting a battle against my old man for her, in effect, and a massive part of my life for our kids. We lived closest to her, and she just was a massive part of their life. And it is depressing. It is a massive, massive void. And I think anybody on here, you know, Steve Williamson posted about his mum's death, Scott talks about it. I think, you know, it's not anything to be ashamed of. It can send you for most of us, it's probably the closest person in our life, particularly in our younger years. And
without a doubt.
And if you've looked after her for a long time. And that's why, you know, that's when I say to people about be nice and causing people aggro and stuff like that. You don't know what's going on in people's lives or what they've been through. And what triggers they've got. Like instantly you start talking about that. I think back about that period and it was horrendous. And I still don't talk to my old man, you know, and I know now there's going to come a time that I'm going to get a phone call. And I don't know when. He's probably 90 now, early 90s. Yeah, he is early 90s. So I'm going to get a phone call that he's dead. And that's going to be a horrendous situation for me in so many ways to deal with, so many ways. I understand fully how you feel. It's a horrible thing.
It's quite recent, of course. And
yeah.
Anyway, there is actually quite a funny side to it. I mean, at this time, I was still doing the football and the racing every day. Yeah. I know, and you know, I can still remember it. I mean, I used to listen to the pods in the car when I was travelling. I mean, they were great. I mean, you go off in a rant, and you know, I could lift the mood.
Yeah.
This particular night, I could still remember. Actually, I think you've just lost your dog.
Right. Yeah.
And
we nearly managed to lift the mood, and then you mentioned the dog.
I will lift the mood. I will. anyway, you'd had this rant as I was doing this particular day. I'm really down. Really, really down. I say the contemplation. That's what terrifies me, the fact that how close I could have been to topping myself, really. It's quite frightening. Anyway, we'll move on from that, make it lighter. And I was just checking the horses for that day. And, like, you know, I can remember bursting out laughing. We had a 33-1 winner. Samovar, he was. I can still remember the name of the blessed horse. I think because it was bigger on Betfair, because I'd got no bookies accounts and long gone. That was just Betfair. Yeah. And, you know, I just remember bursting out laughing about that. It's weird. And then, of course, not long after that, we went into COVID, didn't we? Lockdown. Yeah. But I was better mentally prepared. And I happened to I've been working on this project that we work together. It's you have invested in it. I still can't believe that. I happened to get into touch with you because I needed help and advice on it. And you talked me through it and you said, oh, quite like that, something I don't do. And it sounds like it's got legs. Yeah. And you invested in it. Well, could it knock me back with a feather?
Yeah. I mean, it just to, you know, again, people won't know that I do invest in certain individuals, things I don't like. What I liked about yours was one, the work you'd put into it, which is a real, for me, listening to this now, because we didn't talk about the previous 20 years when we had that conversation. You know, you literally sent me some stuff that I looked at and I liked what I saw. We talked it through and I said, right, let's fast track this if we can for you. But it was spread bedding.
It was, yes.
It is spread bedding and it's something I don't do. What is stunning now, listening to this, whether I'd have done that back then, you know, we're 2 years in now, whether I'd have done that back then had we had all this other stuff before, I don't know. I mean, it's an amazing how you've gone from this guy who did everything, obviously had all this, you know, upset as well, which you'd think maybe would tip you back into the old ways more than there, that actually what you presented to me on that period, which it would have been 2 years ago, wouldn't it?
March, April of the
March 2020 when it was then, that it was a full, you know, proper built out method that actually has really good logic to it and reasoning to it. And as you say, it's got legs to it, which is, you know, it's okay. Stunning. Where did that come from? Where do you suddenly go from this guy who's lost his mum, by all accounts, been a sort of compulsive gambler, to the guy who sent me that email with that spreadsheet on? What's happened in that little period there?
I suppose it's the OCD in me. I do like figures and stuff. I mean, I'm not very technically, I mean, I'm like you, I'm very much a paper and pen man, but I've learned Excel and that sort of stuff online, or I nick bits off your spreadsheets and formulas and things and incorporate them in. If I can fathom them in myself, because
I'll bill you for those then.
Well, exactly. Why not? I deserve it. But yeah, look, the best way is to learn from people that are doing it correct, I always think.
Yeah.
I mean, look, anybody listen or following you on FDS, look, the most important thing I can say to people, the person we've talked about, I don't recognise him.
Hmm.
I mean, that was obviously me. But I mean, what you really need, or a key thing, is somebody to follow that talks sense or does it themselves. A role model, for want of a better word, then, if you like.
Mm.
And if you can't learn from that person, then, well, you're a fool to yourself. I mean, anybody doing the summer school now, because I know you said at the end of the summer school that the good option for people to join Ian's Den.
Hmm.
Well, I'm not just saying this. I know if anybody does that and they offer you something, that you will support them.
Yeah, I do support them. And I don't, you know, I mean, you look at our relationship now. Yeah, I put some money up, but I just let you get on with it. But you know that if there's something, you know, the one thing with that is I never, money does change people. And it's when you've got other people's money or whatever, it's that worry of, oh, he's going to kill me if I lose it. And I sort of, you know, I said to you, just do what you do. If you'd come back to me in 2 weeks and said, I've tweaked this or that, but you do always, you know, send me an update and say,
I do.
This is where we're at, good or bad, you know, because when nothing ever is always good or bad, this is where we're at. And that's it. Yeah. And I mean, you should genuinely, Martin, you know, this is the first time we've spoken at length about everything. Give yourself a massive, massive pat on the back, genuinely. Genuinely, and I mean that, and I think people listening to that, there'll be people identify with elements of your story, be it depression, be it sadness, be it compulsive gambling, be it buying stuff, that to turn that round in a relatively short space of time. When, what year was it you lost your mum? 2019?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah, it was, that's right. So to turn that round is... I think it's brilliant. This is why I like doing these pods, because I learn something about people. I absolutely, yeah, I'm absolutely, you should pat yourself on the back.
I suppose it's 40 years of being a Lincoln City supporter to help you with mindset anyway. I mean, anybody out there wants to learn about mindset, all your premiership clubs that you support, I think you should all adopt Lincoln as your second club.
As our second club.
You'll learn about mindset then.
Is supporting Lincoln worse than supporting Spurs?
Well, you're in the Premiership, so I mean, you don't know experience in life. I mean, just Premiership playboys, Ian.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's anything playboy about us.
No,
Lincoln have been promoted, haven't they?
Yeah, do you know, we've actually experienced the most fantastic time in our history. I mean, when Danny Cowley took over. There's a great story he always tells about this. We were rocking at the bottom of the National League. We'd been in there 6 years, having been relegated out again out of the Football League. And we were close to going kaput. We were near the bottom. We won, I think, the last three games that kept us from going out of that league, and we would have gone into oblivion. And the Danny Cowley was manager at Braintree at the time, in the same division as us, and they made the playoffs, part-time as they were. And they interviewed him for the job. We'd had a new chairman come in, South African, and the club started to be picked up off its bootstraps a bit. And they employed Danny Cowley, and he said he remembered looking out the window at the club and seeing these lads playing football. There's a school close to the ground, and they were five-a-side in, I think, on the all-weather pitches there. And he was talking to his brother and said, look at them, all them kids there, they've got Man United shirts on, Liverpool shirts on, you know, all the Premiership shirts on. So he goes down to have a chat to them. And he says, this little lad tugging his arm, and he says to him, I'm a Lincoln City fan, but don't tell me mates, it's embarrassing. And he said that was the mentality that was at the club at the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, he took us out of that division in one season. We won the League Two.
Yeah.
We'd waited. One of my lifetime ambitions was to see Lincoln play at Wembley. I knew I was never going to see it. 134 years we waited. Danny Cowley took us to Wembley, and we won.
Yeah.
And has to be up there as one of the highlights as a Lincoln fan.
Yeah, well, of course it is. Yeah.
Oh, I don't normally bet on Lincoln. I've got just mentioned this one. Danny Cowley was favourite at that time. Every championship club that came up, they wanted him. You know, oh, Danny Cowley's up favourite for the job. Well, he was favourite for the Ipswich job. We'd beaten him on this cup run. By the way, we were the first non-league team to make the quarterfinals of the FA Cup in over 100 years. Some team called Arsenal beat us, but we won't mention that.
There's only one team as a non-league club that won the FA Cup in the 20th century.
I know, Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Betfair, I think they probably still do. They run special markets, who's going to be the next manager at the club. And Danny Cowley was favourite for this job. Well, I sort of got inside information on this because my mate's friend worked at an estate agent, and Danny Cowley and his brother and his mum and dad had bought houses in Lincoln. And they were obviously going to settle here because they commuted up from Essex. He's a West End boy, really. And also, another mate of mine, he was friendly with the ex-chairman of Lincoln City. And they said, it's due to be an announcement at the club next week. Looks like he's signing an extension to his contract. Well, Betfair had got this market and he was favourite for the job at Ipswich. And I thought, Christ, I'll get as much money on this as I can, betting that he won't get the job. Well, it's not a vibrant market. And all I could get on was £650 matched. So that was £1,300, as you know, I bet there were. There was only £1,350 traded on Danny Cowley in that market. And I thought £1,300 of that were mine. And I was really impressed with that.
Well, I mean, that's like a story out of it. That's like your old bookmaking days. And it's like a story in the shops where the bloke, yeah. Oh, no, he ain't going there. But you did, and well, I don't know what to say to that. You did act on it and lobbed most of the market.
I mean, it's always a risk, but I sort of got inside information, but all but 50 quid of that.
What would you have done if he had gone to Ipswich?
I'd have wept. Only be the fact that we'd have lost Danny because...
Oh, you wouldn't have wept over the money?
Probably not, Ian.
You wouldn't have popped down the estate agents and had a go at them?
I'd have probably throttled me mate. Given
I'm going to say I would. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But who knows? But it was the fact that he brought us success. We're not good enough. We've got no money at the moment. Financial fair play's gone where teams can spend what they like. I mean, we've got some huge spenders in our division. I remember you asking me before the season started, how good are Lincoln going to be this year? And I said to you, we'd do well to finish mid-table.
Yeah, and I think you are about mid-table now, aren't you? 10 to 12, something like that. Yeah, I mean, the game's gone, isn't it? All levels, the game's gone. Doesn't matter what, the game's gone. I admire people like you do dig in and support these. You know, football needs that, the lower league teams, and it's what we get introduced to. I got introduced to Spurs on the back of a 5-0 beating by Arsenal, but I still come out a Spurs fan. I don't get how people change, but for you guys who are doing that, it's fantastic. Martin?
Found out during lockdown, because I do family tree. I've done my family tree years ago. And my cousin's hubby said, you do realise we're related to Herbert Chapman? I says, no, we're not. So he sent me this branch of the family tree and he sent me the book, Herbert Chapman's book. It's a great book. I mean, and it turns out we are actually related to him. Or he's married into the... outside of the family, if you like, down the line. It's my grandfather's cousin's wife, but something like that. Anyway, married him. And
I'm not sure, Martin, where you thought telling me you're related to an Arsenal legend was ever going to win Curry any favour.
It doesn't with me either. I mean, I hate telling people that.
I'm not even sure I'm going to publish this pod now, honestly. Flipping dearie me.
Drop that bit off. Because I know how much you hate Arsenal. And,
Gooner relatives. I'm having podcasts with Gooner relatives now. What is going on?
I'm definitely not a Gooner. I'll tell you that now.
No, Martin, well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for being honest. As you say, I think hopefully people take bits from that, particularly the latter stages and how you've looked at turning it around and focusing. I'll help you all I can as well, you know. We'll catch up after Christmas, see how we're doing with our jumps racing. Yeah. all I can say, yeah, thank you ever so much for coming on. And I will speak to you soon.
All right, Ian. Thanks very much. Good luck to you.
All right. Cheers. Thanks ever so much. Cheers, Martin. Bye. Bye.